I'm Marco Werman. This is The World. In 1970, several American culinary icons got together in southern France. Among them, Julia Child, MFK Fisher, and James Beard. Luc Barr says that time in Provence shaped the way we eat now. Barr is Fisher's grandnephew and the author of Provence 1970.
It wasn't really a planned trip. Julia Child had just finished the second volume of Mastering the Art of French Cooking, and it was a huge bestseller, and they had launched the book that November, and then she and her husband, Paul Child, said, let's go on vacation to our house in Provence. And they said to everyone they knew, you know, come with us. Meanwhile, my great aunt, MFK Fisher, had a long planned trip to France with my grandmother already set for that fall. And so they said, yeah, we'll stop by too. James Beard, coincidentally, was signed up in this diet clinic nearby in Grasse. So it was really a coincidence that they all found themselves there in the sort of late fall, winter of 1970, together.
Now, the conceit, if I can put it that way, of your book is that this moment in Provence in December of 1970 was important for American cooking. So describe the food scene at that moment in the U.S. and what you believe happened.
I just want to back up quickly to, you know, the fact that all of these people had discovered food and cooking in Europe. They were Americans who had had this kind of epiphany about food when they first came to France and discovering, wow, you know, bread with a delicious crust or amazing French butter and just food that they could not find at home in America. And they brought that back and taught Americans how to cook, especially Julia Child. I mean, her show starting in 1962 had a huge impact on American cooking. Fast forward now to 1970, they're no longer so interested in French food. You know, for the longest time, good cooking was French cooking, and a great restaurant was a French restaurant. And now in 1970, that's starting to change. You know, people are talking about Indian food. People are wanting to cook Chinese food. So there's a new interest in a broader view of cooking.
There's a crucial moment in the book, in a chapter you call The Twilight of the Snobs, in which MFK Fisher has dinner with the foodie and cookbook author Richard Olney. So remind us who Olney was in the food scene and what happens at that dinner.
I had never heard of Olney before I started working on this book, and he's not super well known, but he's a very influential and fascinating guy. He wrote wonderful cookbooks, and he was a terrific snob and a sort of a misanthrope and the kind of person who was willing to say sometimes bitter and cruel things about other people. He was a bohemian, a new kind of cook who wanted to cook seasonal recipes and was not interested in the classic French super fancy way of cooking. So Olney comes to visit and he stops in and he sees Beard at the diet clinic and he visits with the Childs. And then there's a potluck dinner where he comes to dinner with MFK Fisher, my great aunt, and her two friends, Sybil Bedford and Ida Lord. It's the crisis point of my book because at the end of that dinner, he and Sybil Bedford end up sort of drinking into the night and recounting all of their bitter resentments about everyone else. And at this point also is when MFK Fisher has sort of had enough and decides to leave and go off on her own.
Just take us into that little sidebar about why she kind of leaves that scene, because things do seem to shift for your great aunt in that moment.
MF had long thought that she was going to spend the rest of her life in France. In some deep way, she always thought that in the end, she would end up dying on a hillside in Provence. And now coming to the realization that, you know what, she's had enough of this kind of continental snobbery and this superiority that seems so deeply connected to a certain kind of attachment to France, which Olney represents. So Olney and Sybil Bedford, who go on and on about what is a great wine, and of course French wine is so much better than California wines could ever be, and so on and so forth, and she's had enough of that. So she decides to leave. This is a week before Christmas, and she goes off on her own to Arles. She checks in at a hotel, and she wanders around Arles looking for a restaurant to eat at, and then she goes back to the hotel every day, and she writes in her diary, and it's sort of stream of consciousness, thinking about France and herself and her life and what it all means. And I found this diary, which gave me a kind of view into her psychology at that moment.
What was that like for you? I mean, with the diary, with some of these letters, which included love letters and a journal of your great aunts. I mean, what did you learn about MFK Fisher through the process of researching this book that you didn't know before?
I learned a lot, actually. I mean, it's funny. I grew up knowing her and visiting her as a kid. I grew up in California in the 1970s. And so when I was 9, 10 years old, we would stop by all the time and see her up in Sonoma County. But I didn't know her in this kind of intimate way. I was very fortunate that my great aunt was having this love affair with Arnold Gingrich. Gingrich was the founding editor of Esquire magazine. He was married, unhappily, and they had this kind of sort of romantic relationship that really what it amounted to was a lot of letters. In fact, they wrote each other letters every single day. Mm-hmm. And when I was working on the book, then I found MF's letters back and forth with her daily letters saying what she was doing while she and James Beard were going to go down to the Picasso Museum or whatever it was, the sort of the daily schedule and what they were eating and talking about. And like I said, full of gossip and, oh, who's going to be the new, you know, restaurant critic at the time since Craig Claiborne is leaving, and all this kind of stuff is in these letters. And again, I was very fortunate to find that stash of letters. The letters and the diaries did give me an intimate view into not just MF, but all of these characters, actually.
So, Luke, back to these foodies and food snobs in Provence in 1970. What do you think this tension of all these different characters and personalities actually led to? I mean, what do you think about that moment struck you as pivotal to today's American palate?
Let's start with Julia Child. Julia Child, she wants to do different things. She's ready to do a New England clam chowder. She wants to try different kinds of food other than this French cooking. So she's ready to move on. Meanwhile, MF is also deciding to leave France behind and write less nostalgically and less sentimentally about France. And in terms of food, you know, I think Olney, in a way, shows us the perhaps most vividly the way forward. And he, like,
he was kind of the hero in your book.
I think he is, in a way. Olney is the mentor for Alice Waters and that whole strand of a more bohemian kind of cooking. It's interesting to think about, you know, in the 60s, great restaurants were French restaurants, and great chefs, they went to cooking school, and then they trained with other chefs, and they worked in the kitchen, and they were apprentices, and there was a whole system for how you became a restaurateur. Now, Alice Waters comes along in the late 60s, early 70s, and she launches Chez Panisse. She's never trained in a kitchen. She didn't go to school. It's a kind of more bohemian way of cooking, and then she's got the garden, and she's bringing in the seasonal vegetables and all that. You know, that's all in the air at this moment.
Luke Barr, author of the book Provence 1970. Great bunch of stories, Luke. Thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's a tune by the band Massilia Sound System. They're from Marseille, not too far from Provence. It's about camaraderie and eating. It's called Street Dinner. That'll do it for me, Marco Werman, the rest of our team from the Nan and Bill Harris Studios at WGBH in Boston. Bon appétit until tomorrow. Vraiment, ils veulent arriver à ce point. Et c'est assez difficile, mais après...